I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, marketers, advertisers, and business owners. Find yourself chatting up the same audience in the same places, using the same old lines? Maybe it's time to podcast the net further to catch your next customer. With Acast, there's plenty of fish in the sea with more than 100,000 podcasts and millions of listeners. So there's a perfect match for every business. Use our ad platform to cast your net, then narrow down using targeting such as demographic, show categories, audience segments, and more. Find your match, then reel them in. Advertise on more than 100,000 podcasts with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.
I teach people to make films on their smartphones now, including dramas that go into cinemas. So I'm really interested in how we adapt and change our use of media and the way that we personally use media. I was thinking about why people are willing to pay so much for Netflix and Amazon and Disney and not think about it, and then why they hesitate to pay for something like the BBC. The government decides how the BBC license fee works. And in the last round, they instructed the BBC they had to pay for World Service, which is a soft power for the Foreign Office. BBC can't just be expected, like the NHS, to do the non-profit bits, because the NHS wouldn't exist in the same way.
This podcast is a Royfield Brown production. Find others on iTunes.
All right.
Yeah. Ladies and gentlemen, please remain standing for the singing of our national anthem.
The United Kingdom is a great country.
Never been a good bet to bet against America.
Hi, hello, and welcome. This is Mid-Atlantic, where we explore the defining issues of the transatlantic world. I'm Royfield Brown, and today I'm sat in a rather lovely Birmingham. It's spring-like in the Midlands. And today we're joined by Jane Mope, a seasoned journalist with 40 years worth of experience. That can't be true.
Sadly, yes.
Oh, wow. All right. And the former head of the BBC in London. Jane has significantly shaped the UK media landscape, having set up London Live and contributing to the restructuring of STV News. She is now dedicated to supporting emerging documentary filmmakers with the hashtag DocSafe initiative. Jane is also about to receive a lifetime membership award from the NUJ, recognising her contribution to journalism. Today, we'll discuss the financial pressures facing the BBC, stemming from its traditional license fee funding model. And we're also going to look at some broader challenges of the declining traditional media market within the UK, as the UK and as the world goes through this digital transformation. We'll also delve into the complexities of maintaining editorial independence amongst political pressures, with declining audiences and intense competition from global streaming platforms.
On the rough figures I've got, that seems to be a slightly better result for Labour. I would guess a swing, the lowest swing we've had yet, but still a substantial swing to the Conservatives there in Newcastle.
Now, righto, Granddad, you pop upstairs and get the floorboards up. Now, you know what you're doing, don't you?
Don't you worry, Jill. Leave it to me.
Right. Oh, it's a craftsman. Wait, Granddad, do you want a jemmy?
No, have one before we left.
There are some 4 million different kinds of animals and plants in the world. 4 million different solutions to the problems of staying alive. This is the story of how a few of them came to be as they are.
Wolf Jane, How the devil are you? It's been a long time since we last spoke.
It's been a ridiculously long time. I think over 20 years, which is crazy, isn't it?
It is absolutely crazy. And can I just say, in the last 20 years, I've put on weight and lost hair. You look exactly the same.
I've gone grey, that's all, but grey with happiness because I've found my happy place. And it's funny that you're in Birmingham as well, because that's where I actually started in my journalism career, in local press. So I worked in Solihull and I covered all the courts in Birmingham, and I know the Midlands in the UK very well. So it's like a full circle for me.
I don't want to make it sound like you're old, Jane, but 40 years ago was obviously the pre-digital age.
Definitely. We were on hot metal. We had paper that went on spikes. You had to type on a manual typewriter. So in my lifetime, I have seen everything change completely. And I think in my lifetime, I've also, in my career, I've kept up with a lot of that change in terms of changing my own working practices. I teach people to make films on their smartphones now, including dramas that go into cinemas. So I'm really interested in how we adapt and change our use of media and the way that we personally use media. I don't think it should be an age thing, but because I'm old and experienced, I can hopefully see some of the longer term trends that have been going on in the media as well.
Do you think that British media on a whole, before we come on to, let's say, the BBC, is ideally placed to embrace the changes which are happening in the wider digital landscape?
Yes and no. I think some advances have been made. Everybody's aware of what needs to be done. And we can see from all of the streaming hubs of all of the broadcasters that they know that they've got to be digitally available. But I was thinking about why people are willing to pay so much for Netflix and Amazon and Disney and not think about it, and then why they hesitate to pay for something like the BBC. And I was thinking that really, all of the consumers of media are high consumers of everything, and they really care about brands. And I think being an island and outside of Europe pretty much now as well, the UK needs to create brands that people really want to be part of, and they need brands that are that. And it's quite hard because it's quite a solitary market unless you create multinational content. And the BBC and Channel 4 and ITV are good at doing that, but it's hit and miss. And the stuff that they used to do, which was more grassroots British content, has less of a home or is made to be less desirable. It's quite complex what I just said, but hopefully we'll unpack that a bit as we're talking.
Let's quickly understand the UK's TV viewing habits as detailed in Ofcom's latest report. Traditional TV viewership is on a decline, with a noticeable drop from 83% to 79% of the population engaging weekly from 2021 to 2022. This trend is part of a broader shift away from traditional broadcasts, as younger demographics increasingly gravitate towards streaming services such as Netflix, Amazon Prime, and Disney Plus. These platforms are favored not only for their diverse content offerings, but also for their on-demand nature and ad-free viewing experiences. Moreover, the audience for traditional TV is aging, indicating a shift in media consumption patterns across different age groups. Additionally, there is a rising preference for consuming television content on mobile devices and laptops, reflecting the ongoing digital transformation in media consumption. This evolving landscape is prompting traditional broadcasters to enhance their digital platforms to retain viewer interest and compete in a rapidly changing environment.
So if we have this declining viewership and it's getting older, you do understand the pressures on the BBC to have a new funding model, don't you? And just for our international listeners, in effect, anybody who in the UK who has a television has to pay a BBC license fee. Americans will just call it a tax because that's fundamentally what it is, regardless of whether you watch the BBC or not. You have a TV, you have to pay this sum of money, and every 10 years there is this new round of funding which the BBC goes into, and the license fee goes up, and that fundamentally gives us this behemoth, which is the BBC, which has television stations, it has a great website, it has radio stations, and it's regional and it's national, etc., etc. The situation can't go on, though, can it, though, Jane, in terms of the complicated media landscape? The next time the BBC license fee funding comes up, is probably going to be the last. Surely less people are watching traditional TV. My brother proudly told me yesterday that he hasn't watched terrestrial TV in 15 years.
Has he watched anything on the iPlayer? And has he listened to radio?
I said exactly the same thing to him. And I added, but what about sport? And he says, yeah, okay, I've watched some World Cup and whatever.
Yeah.
But that for me was really quite interesting because we did touch on Netflix beforehand, that it's selectively people choosing to watch an event, whether that event is sporting or even dramatic. So let's say Game of Thrones is as much an event as England playing in the Euros type of thing. And young people don't feel an attachment, do they, to the BBC in the way that, dare I say, you and I do, and they don't understand its remit.
I mean, I don't as much as I used to, and I find that sad, and that's probably because of the journalism and the fear factor that's led the journalism to be banal and unchallenging. And I think that the problem with the BBC is that you said that the licence fee goes up. It might go up to us, but the amount of money that the BBC has goes down because it's stuck in politics. The government decides how the BBC licence fee works. Mm. And in the last round, they instructed the BBC they had to pay for World Service, which is actually a Foreign Office junket. Not junket, that's the wrong word. It's PR, soft power for the Foreign Office. And most countries in the world have their equivalents, Deutsche Welle or Russia Today or whatever. BBC was never asked to pay for that before. So it has to pay for that. It also has to pay for Welsh language television, S4C or S4C. So it has commitments that are nothing to do with the value that the license fee payer gets on the first line. And on the second line, they have to try and make more money back through commercial ventures. And so the commercial work they do has to sell, has to make content that sells. So a lot of the content that you now see on the BBC goes through their commercial arm and has investment put in because they can see that it's going to work internationally. So like Doctor Who now has over a million extra an episode because they did a commercial deal on it. So the BBC license fee payer benefits, but it means it's a certain type of content that's quite similar to other content in the world. So the amount of unique content that we get is going down.
Let's take a moment to understand how the BBC is funded. The BBC is primarily funded through a license fee that every household in the UK must pay if they watch live television or use BBC iPlayer. This fee is set by the government and is used to finance the BBC's various services, including television, radio, and online content. The license fee is reviewed and renewed periodically, typically every 10 years. During this renewal process, the government evaluates the amount of the fee and any changes to how it should be structured. The process involves consultations with stakeholders and the public, and it often coincides with broader discussions about the BBC's role, obligations, and future direction in the evolving media landscape. The outcome of these negotiations determines the financial framework under which the BBC will operate until the next review.
So we talked about Netflix, and obviously there's Amazon. There's a multiplicity of kind of streaming services. How does the BBC compete for young viewers in that type of market? Because the other thing as well, not only are these streamers American, largely in terms of their content offering, but the BBC is fundamentally all about a British kind of content offering. Now, if we have young people who are readily watching Squid Games, which is Korean, and not really having a real sense of like British content, how does the BBC latch on and keep hold of young Brits in terms of their viewing habits?
When I was at the BBC, we had this paper, and I think it was like pre-2000, called Beyond 2026. And it was all about what would happen when TV is not the main way that people watch content. So they've known about this for a long time, and they've known that the young audiences would decline for a long time, which is why they've kept up Radio 1, Radio 1 Extra, 6 Music, and other things that will keep young people listening. And they wanted to do a lot more online, but regulation stopped them from doing that because they didn't want to be competing with other commercial providers. Then they had BBC Three, which was a youth-facing TV service, which they strangely took off air to prioritise BBC Four, which would appeal to the politicians who are deciding about the licence fee, because it's very old skewing. But they've brought back BBC Three as an online streaming service. And actually, BBC Three has some amazing new talent. It's a place where they can nurture more risky programming. But I'm not sure that the BBC is going to reach enough people with it, because they've left it for too long and the BBC doesn't have a lot of marketing money. So the BBC's brand is what people see and hear the most from it. And that is going to be the news service or sport, maybe if you're lucky, and the way that it does sport will sink into people's minds more than, oh, I'm a young person and I know they've got some really cool content on BBC Three. I don't know how they're going to get them to that point.
There's a couple of things which kind of spring to mind what you just said, that maybe the BBC is the broadcaster for national TV moments. The Queen's dead, it's the BBC. England have got to the finals of the Euros, the World Cup, it's the BBC type of thing. And that then makes sense out of me, out of a license fee in this multi-digital platform smorgasbord or whatever we have, which kind of necessitates, I think, a smaller BBC. As much as I have many friends who work in the BBC or have worked in the BBC, I just can't see, unless the BBC is going to do a whole load of commercial deals, timesing whatever it does at the moment, that it can really necessitate the size of the organisation. And also, somebody who really loves radio, I've always been somewhat slightly conflicted. That's a real Americanism, but this is a transatlantic programme.
With all the Amazon and Netflix content we have, we're used to Americanisms, right? It's changing our culture.
The position of the BBC as a radio provider is always being somewhat confusing, in that it's national. They have a pop music channel. What's the reasoning for that now in 2024? They have a black music channel, one extra. I struggle to understand the reasoning for that in multi...
Let me unpick some of what you just said. Because first of all, if the BBC only exists for those water cooler moments, those big moments that define our nation, and it's made smaller, it won't have the capacity to deal with those big moments, and it won't have the relevancy for people to switch to them. I don't think that's enough of a role for the BBC. And if you're talking about what's going to happen with, you know, the relevancy of programming, you know, what people will think is going on, why do we have radio that's focused on black audiences, Asian audiences, or other specific audiences? This comes back to the BBC has to be relevant to everyone, because everyone pays the license fee. What they need to do within those services is to be more challenging and more risk-taking than a commercial operator would be. And that's why those places should exist. So even like Radio 2 has to play more music that's fresh and new than a commercial operator would do. And it needs to have more variety in its programming. It needs to have some stronger news content and so on, so that it can be relevant to more people. BBC can't just be expected, like the NHS, to do the non-profit bits. Because the NHS wouldn't exist in the same way, or National Health Service.
But it also dampens, kills the commercial sector. And I think the UK commercial radio sector is terrible, by the way, right? But the very fact that if there is any local radio journalism in the UK, it's fundamentally being done by the BBC. And arguably, the BBC isn't even doing it. I don't know how many potential black music stations the BBC is denying oxygen because of one extra. And with YouTube streaming music, with Spotify, etc., as somebody who, like everybody of my age group, grew up listening to John Peel and Bruno Brooks and all of that, I struggle to see the place and the space for Radio One other than nostalgia. I couldn't even tell you one DJ that's even on there now. But then again,
part of that is your age. The other thing on that is that BBC Sounds has now emerged as an iPlayer for audio. And it's like the iPlayer, it is not about linear listening. Mm. And there is content on there that is made just for BBC Sounds, which gives a much greater variety of content to choose from, in the same way that some content on iPlayer doesn't go onto the main TV channels. It might later if it gets popular. And I think there are attempts by the BBC. I sound like I'm really backing them, but I'm not partisan on this at all. But I'm interested that they are doing things which are correct for that digital future, creating platforms where people will find content, whether or not they're aware of channels or radio stations. And when you talk about local radio, that used to be the training ground for all radio. And because there was investment, proper investment in local radio, people would have somewhere to start. Local radio in the BBC has been run down so far financially now that particularly the journalism, which is an important part of what our democracy, is appallingly ill-funded. And I think this is the same in newspapers. We're just seeing what I call journalism. People can write a press release and literally every word of it will be regurgitated on the airwaves or in newspapers. And that is not democracy. There's so little challenge going on in all media in this country that we're all suffering. Our democracy is suffering. Our ecosystem for generating new talent is suffering. And the idea that we would squeeze the BBC even further, to me, is the wrong thing to do. I think what we have to do is set better targets for what the BBC does to increase the content ecosystem, to engender more creativity, and to get that fantastic British export, which is high-end creative excellence, which is Burberry of this world. We look at brands. There's things that this country does that are amazing, and a large part of what the BBC does is still amazing and is doing brilliantly in the world market. And that's what we should be investing in. We shouldn't be saying, oh, we'll just stay small, do this once a year, we'll get hanky out when somebody dies. That's not what it should be about in my book.
A few things, right? And I'm loving this, by the way, because this has not gone at all the way that I thought it was going to go. Number one, how realistic is it for anybody to set any targets for the BBC for the next 10 years, considering that we don't even know what the digital world is going to be like, the wider broadcast world is going to be? Nobody 10 years ago was talking about TikTok, and TikTok has come and taken everybody's lunch. So there is that. The strategic model of the BBC in terms of the length of its funding and its strategic planning, that needs to change, because 10 years ago, 2014 was a completely different age. Yes, we had Netflix, but House of Cards was just about breaking back then, which is going to lead to the rise of all the streamers. And whilst the BBC could well be the training ground for talent, as I'd said before, it's also been the dampening effect on regional press to a small degree, but much, much more definitely radio.
Let's chat about how the BBC, with its mighty presence and public funding, really puts the squeeze on local independent radio. The big thing here is that the BBC doesn't need ad money, which lets it throw a lot into production values and attract top talent, setting a standard that's tough for the little guys to match. This intense competition from the BBC has nudged local independent stations into a bit of a corner. To survive, many have had to consolidate, which means fewer truly local voices on the airwaves. This consolidation often leads to broader, less localized content, diluting what made local radio special in the first place. So while the BBC does a lot of good, it's a bit of a double-edged sword for small independent stations trying to keep it local and real.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
The BBC is coming like a behemoth in the 60s and the 70s. And yes, we've had independent radio, but has only been able to survive is by consolidating, which then gets rid of any level of locality now in this kind of digital age. And that is in part because of the BBC. And to the point about journalism, I take that, but there's two competing pressures on the BBC, surely, in that regard. Number one, if the BBC is incredibly strident, it's going to take pot shots from politicians. And then because of the internet, we have the rise of what you said, journalism, but also because younger adults are much less geographically rooted in the way that, let's say, our parents and definitely our grandparents all read the local newspaper. No young person is reading the local newspaper. They're getting any local snippets of news. It's probably on Facebook. It's probably, you know, something on Instagram. They're not buying local newspapers. So again, how does the BBC navigate its way through all of that?
I know from working there in both the commercial side and the public service side that they have to serve up their content in different ways on different platforms. And they have a lot of partnerships with these platforms. They create a lot more short clips. And they try with, as I said, BBC Sounds to get into the podcast world so that they can be discoverable on lots of different platforms. And then the key question for them is, how do they keep the BBC brand there? And because it needs to be audible or physical for them to be able to claim that product so people can see that or hear that product and know it's BBC. And that's quite difficult. And when I was there, and I don't know how much of this is going on at the moment, but I don't see a lot of evidence, we did a lot of partnerships to help independent radio, to help other local media, because the BBC had that resource, and actually it would improve and strengthen the content of the BBC if it worked more in partnership with people. But the BBC's always got that slightly big brother feel about it. And a lot of the people who work at the BBC aren't very connected or real in the real world, because they have a lot of people who come from the same education system, the same social class. I think they've gone backwards on diversity. And then you've got this fear factor of making a mistake. You talked about pot shots. I've seen the result of that on journalism. There used to be a lot more boldness in the journalism, and people were pitted against each other to have proper debates. And we heard from people we didn't feel comfortable hearing from, and we had proper interviews. But I always say the BBC is a bit like McDonald's. It's always afraid of a bad burger. And it's so afraid of what might happen if something goes wrong that it doesn't go there. And unfortunately, if you don't go there, you never really discover what the world's about. And there are places in which it goes further. It's got some good investigative strands, and some of the journalists, many of whom have left because they would prefer to have their own voice, some of them are still leading brands for them who really do raise the questions that we need raised on our behalf. But that fear of what's going to happen every 10 years is paralyzing. And that's why, and I think we need to involve the public more in deciding what will happen. The difficulty then you have is that who will lead that debate? It will be the media. And the media is predominantly owned by the press barons and the commercial guys who don't want the BBC to succeed and who support our government and want to keep a status quo government in place. And the government doesn't want any challenge. And all of this boils down to democracy again, because at the end of the day, if we have a truly thriving BBC, it should be one that reflects the society we live in, challenges what's happening, creates amazing content, and is a real flagship for the world. And as I've said, in moments, it's still there. You only have to look at the Natural History Unit and the fact that David Attenborough is still on air at 96 to realise that we have crown jewels. And people do appreciate them, although we don't own the crown. Well, I don't know why I said we then. You see, I left the BBC determined that I wouldn't have it on my forehead and I wouldn't die with it emblazoned, because it is institutional in its outlook. And I didn't want to be part of that. But now I'm saying we already. You see, that's terrible. That's really worrying. Bloody hell.
But maybe when you said we, it's also because Sir David Attenborough is a UK totem, isn't he? Which he's beloved throughout the world. I watched, it was Blue Planet, whatever the last thing that he did.
Blue Planet 2, yeah, he's just brought out mammals, yeah.
And I watched that when I was in California with friends, and they knew him and said he was wonderful. We can all have a little bit of ownership in him as a way of representing the UK. So the we still stands. It's not just your corporate shill for the BBC. You mentioned diversity inclusion, and you said that you thought the BBC had gone backwards. So I really want to pick you up on that, because the BBC, in terms of trying to be visibly inclusive has found itself at the sharp point of many a culture war spat. But I was always struck whenever I went to the BBC in W1A, the front of desk was always incredibly diverse. And then you walked into the wider offices and then it was a snowstorm. It was just like whiter than white. It's been a long time since I went to the BBC, maybe about 7-8 years ago. I'm presuming that is better. But why do you say that the BBC has a diversity and inclusion problem?
My goodness, I wish I knew. I think it's an absolute travesty that a public service broadcaster can exist and not reflect the audience in its staffing base. And when I ran BBC London and set it up, I created it in such a way that we would reflect the city that we were part of. And Greg Dyke was director general then, and he'd called the BBC hideously white. So we had the leadership there that could change things. And when he came to BBC London in those days, he looked around and went, oh my goodness, this is brilliant. This is it. This is where we need to be. And we made a lot of headway in that. When I left, everything just went back, reverted to type, because there wasn't a buy-in from the leadership on it. And I just don't get it. And also, if the culture changes and it's not relevant to those people who come in from different backgrounds, they're not comfortable staying. So people leave. And then the more people who leave, the less likely to attract people in, because they don't see people like themselves. And so there has to be, I cannot believe that there's not been some penalty for the BBC not getting this right, because it makes sense. And if you look at other public service broadcasters, if you look at Channel 4 and you look at Channel 4 News and the diversity, not just in ethnic diversity, but also disability, mental health, all sorts of different types of diversities, we're getting it just naturally fitted into their news programme. And that's the way the BBC should feel. And it's gone massively backwards. And the whole of journalism in the UK has, I think it's 94% of journalists are white. And that is completely unacceptable in today's world. And I've never accepted when I was there that could be the case. And when I started London Live, which, by the way, was not for the BBC, it was for the Evening Standard, the newspaper for London, won the local TV license, which I created a plan for. And the whole plan was about talent and rawness of London and the vibrancy of London. And I created a raw strand where anybody could come on, no matter what their background or experience. If they had content, we'd put it on there, any shape or size, the same way as I'd done with Al Gore's channel, Current TV, before. And that, to me, was the whole reason for that channel existing. And the minute I left, that got cut because it didn't make commercial sense. And public service shouldn't always make commercial sense.
But it isn't just always making commercial sense. It potentially, and I agree with you, by the way, 100%, but potentially pushes the BBC into culture wars, doesn't it? That the BBC are trying to force these things down our neck. Oh, they're talking about, I don't know, being a Muslim Yorkshireman. Oh, they're talking about being gay. And certain sections of unenlightened British public opinion see that as the BBC having a liberal agenda.
And if you were a big company in the UK, you wouldn't call it liberal. You would call it common sense, because that's your audience is your customer, right? And to be able to serve that customer, to protect the future of your organisation, you need to be relevant to them. You're not going to be relevant to them if your staff has all grown up in a certain way and gone to certain schools. And that is just the norm in the BBC still, which is just really hard to understand and compute. And it's not just the BBC, to be fair. There's a whole problem in media on diversity. I work a lot in documentary now, an independent documentary, and BFI does some good work, but you know, it's a very white environment, and the world is so much more exciting than that. And that's where broadcasters like Al Jazeera are fantastic, because their witness strand is all about having the local voice as the storyteller. And I know the BBC's had initiatives to put the foreign back into foreign correspondence, so that people who are telling stories actually know the place. They're not flown in from another colonial country. But it takes time and effort and conversation and boldness to create a culture that makes that what should be acceptable. And I think the BBC is so strapped now, or considers itself so strapped for money, space, time, with rolling news to manage and all these agendas, that it's not valuing that role that it has in society. I talked about the McDonald's thing. It's also the Daily Mail factor. When you work at the BBC, everything you do could land in the Daily Mail tomorrow, which the Daily Mail utterly hates the BBC. So everything you do, you're thinking they're just going to maul us for it. And you've already talked about, well, if you do that, you'll get criticised. And that's where you need vision and you need leadership. And I just don't think the current director general is the first director general not to come from a journalism background. It's caused a few problems recently. And there's lots of difficulties. And the other thing is that the BBC is now not as competitive salary-wise. They've had to publish all their salaries. And everything that's happening is making it less easy for them to recruit people and retain them. But it's not that it's not possible to be radical and change things. And I think, as we said earlier, the way to do that is to involve the public. But the public won't be given the free rein to tackle that in their own way, because the media will step in and shape the debate before it's even started.
Starting to wind things down, we've talked about Netflix and Amazon. I could have mentioned Disney Plus, etc. There seems to be a new kind of hierarchy of media brands, which are truly international. They might emanate from the US, but they're truly international. And let's throw into that, we mentioned it, TikTok before. We haven't talked about YouTube, etc. The lingua franca of the world is English. Surely the BBC needs to make that evolutionary step up. How it does that, I don't really know, because there are a whole lot of political issues around that. But maybe if this is going to be the last time that there is a BBC license fee, that we recognise that this will unshackle the BBC to truly become not just a global news source of repute, which it most definitely is, but to become an entertainment player, and in that way truly represent modern Britain in the 21st century.
To be fair, the commercial arm of the BBC used to be called BBC Worldwide. Cannot remember what it's called these days, but they make a lot of money for the BBC that goes back into the BBC, and they create a lot of brands. The features and formats team, they sell Dancing with the Stars worldwide. The BBC is known through brands that it's created and franchised out to other places. The amount of money that's made by returning drama series from Death in Paradise to Peaky Blinders, which obviously has put Birmingham on the map. This town's just come out. Yeah, thumbs up to Birmingham. Happy Valley even. And I talked about Doctor Who earlier. There are big BBC franchises around the world. And I don't think anything stops the commercial arm from doing that.
That's slightly different because... And I know I mentioned Game of Thrones before, and that's HBO, right? So there is those totemic shows, but then there is the platform. And you're completely right. The BBC does a whole load of commercial deals. I remember, I think it was called Black Orchid. I really can't remember. I remember there's this great show which they did in conjunction with, I think, the Canadian broadcaster. I had no idea that was the BBC. And it was my kid's mum about 7 years ago. And you got to watch it, it was great. And then I saw the BBC logo, you know, I was like, bloody hell, I had no idea, whatever. But there is the show, but there is the platform, which the show acts as a way of enhancing the platform. When people watch worldwide Death in Paradise, they're not thinking BBC. That's very much secondary. They might see the logo, whereas I can go and log on to HBO, whether I'm in Canada visiting my kids, or the US when I live 6 months a year, or in Zimbabwe, and I go, this is a brand which I trust in terms of programming, as opposed to actually who's actually made the program per se for that platform.
And that's something the BBC, the government could invest in, is helping them to improve the commercial iPlayer, because there's an international iPlayer, and that could become a bigger hub for British content, and there's Brit Channel and other places where they show their content off. So I think there are opportunities, like The Guardian's managed to get a really good international platform for its short film content and news. And I think the BBC started to go down that, but you're right, they don't have huge amounts to invest, because actually a lot of the money for those big brands you've talked about is spent on marketing. And that's something 100%. That the BBC can't just suddenly use taxpayers' money to market itself. So it can only do it through the programme. So it's a very difficult position to be in. But I would hate to write it off in the way that you have, that the licence fee's gone, this is going to be the last time and so on. Because I think our country and our creative juices will be much worse off without the BBC. I would like the BBC to be better run and to pick itself up. And I'd love that to be a proper conversation. But I think it would be a real shame if we just consigned it to being every other high street store that we get around the world, another brand that just exists.
We're going to have to do this again and maybe move the conversation on slightly, because as I said, this conversation is not at all gone the way that I thought it was. It was much more of a conversation as opposed to me saying, oh, so Jane, what do you think about
it? I don't do that.
We really have gone backwards and forwards. But somebody spends so much of my time in the United States, and there is a tampening, a slow withering away of the US's media markets.
Cable is less dominant. Absolutely.
But people do still watch local news all throughout the US. And it's much more vibrant. But surely that's to do with the size of the country over that of the UK. And I just think our local media markets just suffer from the size of the country and then also the dominance of London with everything to do with the UK. However, let's continue this conversation, Jane Mope, because I think we've come to the end of our allotted time and we haven't even talked about other bits of the media. We're so taken up with the BBC. So the first question is, will you come back on again in the next couple of weeks?
Absolutely. Yes, I'd love to. It's been great fun. I hope other people have benefited from it. We'd love to hear their thoughts.
Funny you should say that. You're so good at this. You've queued me up. So, dear listener, new thing which you started. If you go on to WhatsApp, you can actually now post a voicemail, which we're going to start putting these together in a kind of a compendium show where you have your right to reply. So, of course, there is royfield.substack.com. where you get an article around the podcast. And because of the comments, which are now starting to come in, we've decided to launch a new type of show. As we did the essay this week, it'll be the compendium show. So please, it's WhatsApp +447 957 167 696. Go there and you can say Roy Fieldy spoke a whole load of bunkum, or Jane was awesome, just whatever. Or if you've got thoughts and feelings about the BBC, send them all there and we'll put that together. At the end of every month, then there'll be a companion show of your voices.
And next time, can I tell them the story about how we met?
Yes, please do. Please.
Not a word meanwhile.
That's been me, Roy Field Brown. Don't forget, leftist in the politics is right thinking politics. We have to put a death nail into neoliberalism. Hopefully you enjoyed the show which we did this week about why we need to renationalise water. There's going to be many more of those. There are many more key bits of the UK's infrastructure which we need to take back into public ownership. But we're talking about media. This is going to be a strand which we're going to continue also. We're going to have Jane Mope on again soon. Don't forget, look after yourselves. Jane, where can people catch up with you on the socials?
At Beach to Beach, BEECHTOBEACH, which is reflective of where I live in the Sussex South Downs.
There you go. You know where to catch up with her. And of course, I'm just at Royfield everywhere. Super simple. Take care. Look after yourselves. Bye-bye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.